They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there.
We don't need to go populist left or populist right. We don't need to embrace neo-Marxism or neo-fascism, these disastrous movements from the 20th century. Turns out the answer is pretty much our Bill of Rights, our story. Embrace freedom. That's the answer.
And if the LP has a purpose, it's not to put people to sleep. It's to wake them up.
We're here because we love liberty. And we're here because we hate injustice. We are here to save mankind. We are here to fight.
Join us, the Libertarian Party, in perhaps the most exciting, grandest endeavor in history, the restoration of American liberty.
Ideas spread, they can't stop them. An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Hello and welcome to episode 105 of Decentralized Revolution, a podcast from the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus and Mises PAC. I'm Aaron Harris, and I'm your host. We have a great guest today. If you've been on Twitter at all, in the libertarian spaces on Twitter, you know who she is. We're going to talk about her in a second. But before we do, I just want to let you know that there is a we're doing a giveaway for people who become contributing members of the Mises Caucus with a monthly recurring contribution to Mises PAC between now and May 14th. And what we're giving away is we're giving away a Murray Rothbard Silver Round. We're giving away a copy of, I think it's Murray Rothbard's Betrayal of the American Right, and a copy of Patrick Newman's Cronyism book that was featured here on the podcast a few episodes ago. And so in order to be entered into the drawing for that, you just have to go over to takehumanaction.com. And if you scroll down, once you get to that page, I think it says donate to Mises PAC. If you start a contribution that recurs every month, or if you go in and change the current contribution you have, if you want to go from $5 to 10 or 10 to 20, something like that, anybody who starts or increases their monthly recurring will be entered into a drawing to win one of those three items. And we would really appreciate your help on that. We know that, we've asked for a lot of help and gotten it through the recent Take Human Action Tour. We put on events in New York, Chicago, Nashville, and Austin. All of them came off really well, and we really appreciate that. And we got a lot of good sponsors for that tour, and we're going to be getting premiums for contributing members from some of those sponsors here in the future. But right now, just in these couple weeks, until May 14th, the Murray Rothbard Silver Round, a Murray Rothbard book, or a Patrick Newman book, just go ahead and go to takehumanaction.com, scroll down, and start or modify your existing contribution. You'll be entered into that. Some people ask, when you do that form, we ask for, I think, employer and profession. We don't care about that, but the Federal Election Commission does. So because we spend money on political stuff, we have to register with the FEC and get that information. We don't do a background check on you or keep you, keep data in the sense of, we don't care about that information. We just have to ask for it and pass it along. So takehumanaction.com. My guest today on Twitter, she's known as Forest Mommy, at Forest Mommy. She is quite a personality on there. I've been aware of her for a while, even though I try not to spend too much time on Twitter for my mental health. She's kind of a free spirit on there. And she's now running for office, and she's asking for, and I think we've given her our endorsement with the Mises Caucus. And if we haven't, it's just a formality. Her name is Jessica Fenske, and she's running for city council, District 4, in the town of Arvada, Colorado. And in this episode, she kind of talks about how she got involved, some of the things that have happened to her, and some of the criticism she's got since she has stepped forward to run, and her election is this fall. So if you want to help her out, we'll have the link to her page. It shows, you know, during the interview, I put it up on the screen a few times. She's over at jessicafinsky.com. Or you can go to decentralizedrevolution.com/105, and we'll have the link to her Twitter page and her campaign page and all of that. So I think you're going to enjoy getting to know Jessica Finsky. Yeah, just start by telling us who you are and why you're running for office.
Okay. I'm Jessica Finsky, artist formerly known as Forest Mommy on Twitter. Over the last 3 years, you know, everything was really dumb. Everything went really dumb.
Why? What was going on with you? I had a boring, nothing happened in the last 3 years, right?
Yeah, no, nothing. It was business as usual. Right. No, got me mad, brought me to Twitter. I eventually found Mises Caucus and the Libertarian Party, got involved. And then, you know, with the Mises Caucus wanting to take over local, and I'm like, I need to walk the walk. And if I'm going to talk the talk, I have no excuse not to. Yep. So I did it. I'm running, and it's like a whole thing now. I did not expect it to be a whole campaign, but we're in it now. We're doing it.
Yeah. So where are you from, and what's the office you're running for?
So I'm from Arvada, Colorado, and it's one of the district seats. It's District 4 of the city of Arvada, Colorado. And it's basically, okay, Arvada is like a western suburb of Denver. It's in between Denver and Golden, pretty much. And okay, I'm the western side of it, that my district.
Okay. So what are the demographics of the district? We might be able to guess from being close to Denver, but sometimes there's pockets of Knoxville that are not like the rest of Knoxville where I am. So what's your, in suburbs. So what is your town like compared to our normal conception of what Denver's like?
It's actually not half bad. The government has definitely been kind of on the left side of politics, even though they say they're nonpartisan. But there's a lot of agriculture still in the area. Not a ton of major ranches and stuff, but a lot of farms that haven't sold off yet. So there's still like an agricultural vibe, and then just all like suburbs. But I think it's a lot of older people. They're shutting down schools left and right. So it's more grandparents than parents. But then the rest of it is like tract home suburbs kind of housing, I guess you could say. Okay.
Are you from there originally?
No, I grew up south of here, about an hour, in a town called Larkspur, Colorado, is where I grew up.
Okay.
So I'm from Colorado, but
okay. So tell us what you were doing before COVID and how that kind of disrupted things for you.
Before COVID, so I have a good life. I was always like, I call myself the poor man's trophy wife with a real estate license, very cliche, but I volunteered a ton. So before COVID, I was on a land trust board. I volunteered at what we have called the stock show out here. I did a lot of volunteering with the land trust as well. Just like getting really involved. It wasn't specifically this community, but just involved, you know, kind of inspiring other people to get involved. And then COVID happened, and the land trust board actually, we did everything online during COVID, right? And then I started coming back in 2021, not for meetings, but like there was volunteer opportunities. So I was volunteering doing hikes and stuff. And then they had their first in-person board meeting, and you weren't allowed to go unless you were vaccinated. So I was like, okay. And I had just donated a bunch of money and time. So I was just like, really? So that, I don't mess with them anymore. And I actually emailed them asking for an apology, but they refused.
tell us, what's the land trust board? I don't think they have those in any of the states I've been in. Go ahead.
Yeah, so land trust, it's basically for land conservation, and it's very statist. It's very, you basically put a deed or a covenant on your deed called a conservation easement. And it basically, mm-hmm, you sell your develop. So the land trust holds the conservation easements, and some land trusts actually own land too. But this one, we didn't own the land. We were just like stewards and made sure they were following the conservation easement on private property as well as government property. But yeah, you basically sell your development rights in perpetuity. Supposedly, I'm this leftist land grab. I have a feeling they're going to go after conservation easements eventually too, but that would be interesting.
So basically it lets you put on your deed, hey, this will stay either residential or farm use and won't be apartments or factories or whatever. And that stays on the deed. Can you revoke that if you decide you want to, or once it passes to somebody else, they're out of luck, I guess. I mean,
yeah. So when it's buyer beware, you got to check if it's on that type of property. Obviously more properties where there's beautiful viewscapes and their big ranches have it and stuff, but yeah, it's supposed to go with the land. You can sometimes amend things. Like we would have some people say, because they put building on envelopes. So like, okay, there's a house here already, so you can build with, and maybe they'll give them one more spot where they want to build a barn or something like that. So sometimes you can amend things like that. I'm sure it's legal. So I'm sure at some point you could, you know, someone could try and get rid of it, but you have a land trust board who do the easement. So you'd have to convince the whole board and sort of like that.
So is that board a creation of the state? Is this whole thing
It's like quasi state, like works really hand in hand with the open space in the county. And we like, there's a in that county, so this is the county I grew up in, there's a sales tax that pays for the open space. So of course the land trust like pushed for the sales tax vote to go through. But it's like, it's not quite governmental, but it basically is. And when I left, I noticed they were starting to do DEI kind of stuff too for the board, where I was like, oh Lord, here we go. Like, you know, forced diversity and all this stuff was coming up. And I'm like, you're a bunch of rich white old boomers in this county. Like, stop saying you need to put people. They're always like, we need to put people of color on this board. I'm like, that's actually racist. So everything worked out where I'm not with them anymore. So
yeah,
and it was like sad that like I volunteered time and money for 6 years with this organization, and then I wasn't allowed to go to a meeting.
Okay, when they said, okay, we're going to meet again, you got to have the jab, and did you say, hey, I don't want to come, but I want to come, but I'm not going to get that? Like, did you register a complaint, and what did they say?
Yeah, I basically like talked to the director of she's not on the board, but the director of the organization was like, wait a minute. And I guess there was somebody else who did complain, who complained as well, that it was wrong to even go that route. And like, I'm not super smart and educated. And I still knew that not everyone needed to be a vaccine. Oh, and the best part is the meeting was in a barn. It was in a barn. Right. So like,
yeah.
Just so goofy. So they called me, and so I was their young diversity like quota meeting. Like I had been volunteering with them, and they basically wanted me on the board because I was young, and young people aren't volunteering as much and stuff like that. So they were like, no, we don't really want you to leave, you know, we really need the young person. And I was like, I'm done. Like
that's funny. My day job, I'm a freelance editor. I edit like a lot of college textbooks and test materials and stuff. And one of the companies I work for, they actually will put me on projects. At first, they put me on projects because I am a white male, because that industry, like when once in a while I'm on a Zoom call, it's me and 14 white women between the ages of 25 and 50. And so I'm the diversity hire. But now I'm like the top guy for this place. And so, but I got my foot in the door because I was not a woman. So I guess I have something to affirmative action hire. So were you on Twitter before COVID?
No, I had made one at the end of 2019 because I kept getting kicked off of Facebook, which I'm not on Facebook anymore, but I didn't even know how to use Twitter. It was like confusing to me at first. And then, COVID got me on Twitter and changed my life. So there's
I mean, you're quite a personality on there. So tell us about your approach to that, and just the arc of the last 3 years, given COVID and Elon, and what's it like to be a minor Twitter celebrity, I guess.
So I got on, and once I got, I've gotten this account banned before, and I got it back recently, and I went back and looked at my first post, and there was nobody liking anything, but I was saying the same kind of stuff. But I just got on there. I knew COVID, everything was wrong from the very beginning. I knew that I saw the government aspect of it right away. I think a lot of us saw, like, just innately saw that this tyranny was happening, and it was going to be a thing. So I just got on basically to yell into the void to, like, say what I was saying, because I had gotten off of Facebook because I didn't want to argue with people. So I was like, I don't know. I just got on. And then the more it grew, kind of, I kind of knew a little bit about libertarian stuff before I got off Facebook. I kind of, like, was in that world a little bit. So, like, I found some of that on Twitter again, and I found, like, more podcasts back then, like Tom Woods and Pete back in the day, and started, like, hearing all the information, and it helped me just work out my ideas. Twitter really is like my writing. It's just working out ideas that I have in my head, because there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah, and then I would
start getting messages from people that were like, thank you for saying this out loud. I'm too scared to say this out loud. And then I was like, oh man, like, this is serious. What's going on right now? That, like, people really feel silence like that. Like, what a terrible feeling. And then all the craziness happened, and it just kept growing, luckily. And because of Twitter, I got connected with so many people I wouldn't have been connected with otherwise. Even here in Colorado, getting involved with the MC out here and the Libertarian Party out here. And now I'm, yep, I call myself the unofficial face of the Libertarian Party of Colorado.
Yeah.
I got to be a diva a little bit, right? So
yeah. With all those shoes, that's your diva card punched right there. Come on.
Yeah. And they took away dancing. And I was like, I haven't been back dancing since COVID. I used to go once a month to this gay club out here, and they were the first people to do a vax pass.
That's just like
10 years of me going there and supporting these people. And then they're like, no, you can't come in. So I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Real cool. Really liked how that
So is it still like that in Colorado? I mean, what's the mask and jab and all that situation like as of April 23?
It's all forgotten. About a while ago, even though our governor was very pushy about everything, a while ago he wants to get the libertarian vote. So he's been telling everybody, yeah, he's libertarian, and it should be up to the local governments to choose who wears a mask and stuff. But, like, he picks the people, basically go to the public health department. But yeah, no, it stopped at a fairly normal, like, common time as everybody else. I'd say the end of 2021, or no, everyone was getting vaccines in 2021, end of 2021, 2022, I guess. They're pushing it. They did a few, like I said, some of the businesses chose to do vax only at the time. And there's still people wearing masks, though. That's what I don't get right now. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
But they don't force it. I mean, that's how it should have always been, right? But you look dumb.
Yeah. At this point, like, I'm thankfully nobody in my, maybe a couple in my, not family or friend circle, but otherwise, it's like I really want to have a conversation with these people and ask them, but, like, I know that if they're still scared enough or, you know, blue-pilled enough to be wearing masks, I know that I'm only going to succeed in scaring them or something like that for me to even talk about that. But to me, it is fascinating given the fact that, you know, I mean, I kind of figured out from the very beginning, you know, the first couple of weeks, I was like, hey, let's wait and see if people start, you know, dropping dead. You know, my parents are in their 70s. I have another relative with asthma. So I'm like, okay. I think that was a great strategy on their part to say, oh, you can carry it for 15 days and have no idea, and then basically drop dead from it. And then so those first 2 weeks, most everybody was at least a little cautious. Like, I was checking on my old neighbors and stuff. And then after that, you kind of sit and think about the masks, and it's like, of course it doesn't stop, you know, aerosol, you know, but people have just doubled down on that. And now even all the studies have come out, and they basically admit that probably doesn't do much, if anything. But so the people who are still doing it, it's just like, I mean, what are they just trying to out cred themselves, you know, each other for who's the most blue voter in America, or I don't know what it is.
Well, it's just, it was so sad that the whole idea behind the mask then is that everybody's sick all the time, even if they're not sick. Like, that's just like a terrible thing to make people think of other people. And we knew what they were doing, obviously, but I don't know how. I still see people arguing over the mask every now and then, and I'm like, really?
So were you very political at all before COVID? If somebody would have asked you in 2019, hey, what do you think of this whole political stuff? What would your answer have been?
I'd probably be like, I kind of, you know, because that was when things were 2016, everything ramped up and at least put politics a little more out there. But before that, I mean, I didn't know anything about Ron Paul at the time. I'm a terrible libertarian because at that time in my life, I was just like surviving and working. I wasn't involved at all. And so, I would say a couple years before COVID, just getting a little more into the political beat and how things work with my volunteering. And, you know, when you're a volunteer, you see how things kind of work in that world. And then COVID, and I didn't even really want to, I did not want to be in politics. Even the week before I signed up to run, I was like, I don't want to do it.
I used to be a small town newspaper reporter. And so I've got a big dose of 2 or 3 years there covering school board meetings and city council meetings and county commission meetings and all kinds of stuff like that. And you get to kind of see that just how, and I'm not trying to be like super mean or anything like that, but like you get to see just how normal and mediocre the people in doing all this are, and how that it's not really, you know, it's not like they tell you in civics class. They don't sit around and consider every angle, and you know, it's not this it's not the best and brightest running the cities and stuff, even from my experience in bigger cities and stuff too. I think so. What kind of things did you notice when you started getting involved, you know, with the land trust, like the first cracks in the armor, I guess, of like, hey, what, this is not what I thought it was going to be, or what was weird about it?
Well, definitely like the grooming to get me on the board, which it's like a good, they're a good opportunity. So, but I just knew what they were doing because they kept saying it, you know, and working with the county. So they work with the county commissioners a lot because county commissioners fund a lot of the land trust, or not land trust projects necessarily, but the open space projects and whatnot. So like there, I would see like the whining and dining of that, and just meeting a lot of our volunteers kind of overlapped with the county volunteers. So then I would meet a lot of the county like higher ups just through functions. And yeah, they're unimpressive. Not to say I'm impressive either, but it's like these people get put on a pedestal and they think they're awesome too, is the problem. Like I'm totally full of myself, but it's funny, right? But these people, like, it's a different, like, I went to a thing the other day for my city of Arvada, our chamber event. It was a state of the city address from the mayor. He's stepping down. And just like, they're acting so snobby and so just like, we're better than everyone. I'm like, the most people who are voting for me will never go to a chamber event. They don't go to that kind of stuff. They're not brushing elbows with people. They're not getting into positions because of who they know and stuff. So that's kind of what I'm going to try to bring too with my visible, like being visible, is I'm not a snob. I don't know what's going on either. And I want everybody to see it. So I think that people are going to like that. I met with GOP people last night and they were like stoked about me. So
yeah,
doing good.
So yeah. So tell me about, like, there was something, and I have to admit that I only rarely go on Twitter because like, I just can't handle it. Like, it brings out the worst in me. And I just like want to start making fun of people and all this stuff. And then I'm like, my wife is not going to like that. And so I basically, it's not on my phone and I can't do it. So I'm glad we got Dylan running our Twitter page for the Mises Caucus. We're over 100,000 followers now, by the way.
Thanks
to Dylan and Luke. It's awesome. But you, there was something that happened with you on Twitter here within the last 2 or 3 months that was like huge, right? Something big. Am I right?
Yeah. So I filed to run and I posted a picture with my Mises Caucus pin because our whole thing is running local. And if my dumbass can do it, I need to be inspiring other people to do it, right? So I posted a picture. And yeah, within 12 hours, a journalist who hates my guts because I make fun of him on Twitter, he basically made this post and it said, "This anti-vaxxer who hates the government is seeking to be in government and she hates local journalists." And then like he put my picture, even though I had him blocked and he had me blocked. He had my picture from the timeline, which I know they're easy to get around on Twitter, but, and he like posted it and then he doxed me. He put my whole address up and my name, which I had kind of been dropping my name anyways on Twitter. It wasn't, I've obviously face doxed myself like a ton, but yeah. And he posted my affidavit with nothing redacted, my whole address. So he was just trying to be harmful, and it is public info, but the way he did it was totally nefarious and like malicious. He posted that. Posted this thread saying I said stuff about his dad, which I never did, and he never proved it. Like, and he did all of this because of that, but it blew up. Oh, the best part was his last tweet said something like, "Well, this is the public arena now. Like, get used to it," kind of thing. But then once everyone started twittering him, he turned comments off, of course. so he couldn't handle the public arena. Well, then it got quote tweeted like by the biggest one was Jesse Kelly. Quote tweeted it like, "Oh, she sounds great." It like totally backfired on this guy. So that made me, of course, think like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to do this, because within 12 hours I was already blowing up for a stupid city council race in the suburbs. And I'm just like a normal person, really. I'm crazy on Twitter, but I'm a normal person. So it's kind of like, what did they not like about me? So now I got to keep going.
So tell, and you can name him or not, but like tell us about him and what your history with him was. Is a newspaper guy, TV guy?
He's TV. He's on KUSA Denver 9 News. Jeremy Giorgiola. It's the public sphere. His name can be out there. So a couple months earlier, he had threatened to dox a friend of mine through Twitter. He like texted my friend a old mugshot of my friend from 20 years ago, like threatening that he was going to post this mugshot and out him because he shared a tweet talking about this journalist's dad. It's so bizarre how angry, like this, I put this guy on my show. We talked about all the fake, how this, he was threatened to be doxxed by this professional ethical journalist, right? And so then he did it to me like 2 months later to get back at me, I suppose. But yeah, and so we were deep diving too. This news station is owned by a company, or it just sold, but there's a company called Tegna that owns like 60 stations across the nation. And they're the ones that all do the same thing. They all say the same thing. And everybody who's on the board almost for this Tegna is ex-Pfizer executives.
Oh, so, okay. So that's interesting.
So these local news journalists have been for during COVID and everything, they were stirring, they were telling people to snitch on neighbors. There's these couple dudes at the same station that just like vitriol and like anybody else with any information, the condescending narrative, like if you spoke against the narrative, you were, "Oh, they're so much better than you, blah, blah, blah." So like, I don't know if they were just mad at us for con them out, because you can do that on Twitter and they see it, but I'm over it now. We're like more strapped than ever just in case, but
yeah, I mean, I think that's the fundamental dynamic. So I got a master's degree in journalism in 2004, which was in retrospect not the most wise thing to do, and I, from the beginning, like I was always struck by, I still have a few very close friends from that, but the over what, and it was it's like the top journalism school, and what I found was that the people who were sort of most gung-ho and all that were very much, they were like status seekers. They wanted to know famous people and go to, you know, important places and have their name. And, you know, they weren't bad people. and they were kind of good at what they did half the time, but they weren't really interested in like taking down politicians or anything like that. They were interested in, you know, being part of the club. And I mean, I think that we've, you know, 20 years on now, like that's never been more apparent that that's like, you know, this guy says he's an investigative journalist and I'm trying to, you know, like how many politicians has he gotten fired? Right. Like, isn't that your number one, as a journalist, you should afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. And that's not what they're doing these days. So the fact that I think the people who rise in the journalism business, they do enjoy that status. And the fact that people can now talk about them and to them on the same footing on Twitter, which is why this whole blue check mark thing is, you know, they're still going crazy over it, is because that was one of the signals of them being a little more special. And they know that they're not, they suspect it at least, and taking that away from them and putting them on the same level as you or me is just like, that's so deeply wrong to them, because clearly they're anointed to tell us what to think and who to listen to. And I just love it. I love watching them melt down over this.
Oh yeah, they're still going. One of the guys I worked with, Chris Vanderveen, he's like still crying about it. He's crying like, how it's not that we were better, it's that now you won't know who to trust for the news. And it was like, we figured that out during COVID to not trust you, buddy. Like, you were like lying then. So it's just
right. Yeah, the fact that you had the blue check in 2021 and were saying the things you were saying, that's why people don't trust you.
Yeah.
They don't realize that. They still think, and I guess some people do. They say, well, if the lady on the TV told me, it must be true. But more and more people are not like that. And I think it's probably shocking to them, like this guy, that the fact that people would make, I remember now that you said that, I remember that was, people were sending me screenshots and stuff of like, oh, she hates journalists, then I'm going to vote for her. And you hate to be like that. You don't want to hate anybody, but like to hate what they do in their profession, and the fact that they have no idea how many normal people just hold them in, if not outright contempt, just, you know, uninterested disdain. Like I think they're gradually coming to be aware of it. And I think they're going to continue to be even worse to hold on to the last shreds of what dignity they think they have.
Yeah, it's true. I spoke at a Free Assange rally recently when I made the difference. I'm like, this is journalism. And then I told the story about that. I called them a corporate propagandist, because that's what they are. They're corporate propagandists if you're working for Pfizer, basically. And another journalist who was there, who's like an Antifa, like rabble rouser, she was there. And so here's me defending journalism still when it's Assange like journalism. She made this article and she wrote like a little bit about the Free Assange rally, which is why everyone was there. And then the rest of the article is just a hit piece on me. It's like, so she only showed up to make this article because she knows the guys at the news station, even though she's like a lower tier journalist. It's just,
so what was her take on Assange? I'm just curious.
She really didn't say anything. She just quoted a little from my speech. And then Jacob Loria, who's our campaigns director out here for LP, he did a really good speech, and his was like anti-war. So she just kind of quoted it and then just went into talking about how I drink on my podcast. Okay.
You can drink on this podcast too, if you want.
And she posted a picture of me like with really cool glasses on, taking a drink of beer. I'm like, you guys just keep making me look cool. Like,
right. That is pretty amazing. How, what's her name? I want to look her up now.
Heidi Beadle, and it's Beedle. It's a, okay. Yeah, there's a whole Andy, or whatever. He did an expose on her a couple years ago. She was a part of this like Antifa underground trying to do stuff.
She is the resistance. Yeah. Yeah.
She called me a real piece of work. Literally.
You'll know you've made it when you get them to use a word that you can't use on television, right? That's your next achievement to unlock, to get one of them to say a misogynistic slur in your direction. So you're running for city council. What got you to the point where you were thinking about running and this guy doxed you? Like, what were the issues specifically? Because that's, you know, again, with the Mises Caucus, like there are some things, you know, like the war in Ukraine is something people talk about everywhere, but there's, other than like defend the guard and stuff like that, there's not a whole lot of connect to local stuff. And, you know, in some places, like if a Mises Caucus person was running here in Knox County, you know, they're going to run on, except for the one, you know, a couple neighborhoods, they're going to run 2A and anti-Fauci and all that stuff, anti-lockdown stuff. But it's probably different where you are. So what got you thinking about it, and what are the specific issues that that have you most worked up, I guess?
So there was kind of a catalyst that happened in January. We had our LP booth at this political event, and they made me go up and do this spiel for the LP. And after that, all these people came up to me and were like, so excited about, they're like, we don't want to do anything about, we don't care about sides anymore. We just care about people who care about liberty and all this. And so I was like, okay. So I started going to more events and kind of seeing how like people, and because of how my Twitter has gone too, I feel like I'm kind of a connector of people. Like a lot of different kind of people can like me. I'm still very opinionated and whatnot, but I don't really alienate people as so much. Some people definitely. But so it got to this point where I was like, okay, there'd be a lot of support for me in this area. There wasn't even an issue necessarily that was bugging me. There's a few things that I'm definitely going to tackle, I'll talk about, but I just felt like there was this energy that people want something else right now. And with everyone forgetting about local, the school board here is shot. Like everyone's forgot so much about local. So I felt like if I can get in and help inspire people and teach people to do it, and I'm a normal person like they are, you know, that it kind of, I don't know if that sounds like full of myself. It's like, mm-hmm. I really feel like this is, if we're going to be, I'm not a natural leader in that sense, but I'll do something if it helps other people to do it as well. You know? So it came to the point where I was like, okay, no one else has signed up yet. And like, Jacob's like, yeah, I mean, you probably could win. So I was like, okay. And I have a good life. Like I said, I have time for it. I have the energy for it. I'm super involved with the LP and like county, state, everything out here. And I'm a Mises Caucus state organizer. So just kind of something to do to kind of get our signal out too to people. Like I said, the GOP loves me now. And, you know, I mean, although all Mises people, we're all.
I won't hold that against you.
No. Well, I'm like, they don't, it's beautiful. I'm not a professional. I'm not polished. And they like love me. So they get it. They want something real too. They're hungering for something real to get in and kind of shake things up. But we have some local issues. The guy I'm running against, who actually was recalled for this or tried to be recalled, they tried to recall him a couple years ago. It's a big sprawling suburb. And they were like, no, we're going to make it so everyone has to use one trash service. And they didn't put it to vote. And the guy I'm running against, who he's been in for 12 years at large. He's termed out as an at large. So now he's going for the district that I'm in too. So he's been there forever. He's so boring. And like, but he made in an article, he was like, no, we can't let the people vote on if they want one more trash services or not. Like, just thinks the people are stupid, basically, and admitted it, and for democracy lovers, right, they like took that away from the people. So they made it so you can opt out, but there's still everybody has to pay this trash fee even if you're not using it. So that'll be something I tackle, anything like that. We have I'm not like super anti-police or anything, but we've had a lot of problems in Arvada. Johnny Hurley, who I'm sure you've heard about the Johnny Hurley story. And then we have a couple of payouts for settlements for cops that should have never been hired. And they beat the crap out of people. And so we had to, the taxpayers had to foot the bill on that. So from very fiscal things, we're going to have to do, I would like to do some police reform, but I want to get in and see it all, you know, because all these people who've been in there forever, they know everything. And I'm going to just show up and be like, play dumb, basically. And I want them to explain everything to me so I can explain it to everybody else who would want to know, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good tactic. Like when I was a reporter, one of my favorite TV shows ever is the old Columbo show. And his whole shtick was he like pretended to be dumb and disorganized. And, you know, the murderer would not tell him, but like everybody else would be like very helpful to him. And people do like to talk about themselves and the things they know about. And so if you're just nice to them and ask them, they'll talk and sometimes tell you stuff more than they probably want to in some situations. So, but yeah, I'm glad you can, there are people like you can do this. Cause I just could not run for office. The thought of knocking on a stranger's door and you know, I'm pretty outgoing, but not like that. I'm glad you're doing that. So I'm going to put your, is this the correct website? Did I spell that right?
That's it.
Okay. So it's Jessica Fenske. For those of you who are just listening, it's Jessica's regular FENSKE.com. When is the election? How are you organizing your campaign? What's going on? How are you? Are you out talking to voters yet? Where are you at in that process?
So the election is November. The plan is basically I'm going to do a ton of meetups in the area and then door knock. Like you said, like it's funny because I'm a real estate broker and I would never door knock for business, but I'm going to door knock for this. Yep. So the plan is I know my opponent's not door knocking or doing any of that. So my plan is just to hit every door I can or volunteers can, and there's been people who want, like from a medical health group, they want to canvass for me. All these people want to canvass for me. So I should have enough help to hit like a lot of houses. I'm going to do as much as I can myself because I can. And I want to talk to the people. I want to hear their issues. I know like, this sounds like fluff, but I'm like, I'm being for real because this is all I can do because I'm not going to have money from the left and the right. And, you know, it's so just going to talk to people, get to know people, and hopefully that does it. The events are going to be great, too. So then people can come to me if I can't make it to them. So,
yeah,
and I'm just fine. Like, I'm really good at throwing get togethers and getting people to talk. So I'm excited for that. Just more community involvement.
Do you got to talk to the homeschoolers yet?
Yeah, I think I have some homeschool. I have homeschoolers and then school choice people. Yeah. There's like a school choice group that they like me too. Because it's crazy. The charter schools even have to do this gender stuff too, because they're kind of part of the government. And I was like, it's also messed up. I don't have kids. And I'm like, this is messed up how that stuff's going.
Yeah, I taught at a charter school for 3 years, about 10 years ago, and they're basically created by the state and run by, sometimes depending on the state and the school, either a for-profit or a nonprofit, and they can do things differently, but the state basically, you know, has certain requirements and can audit them and revoke their charter at any time. So it's not surprising. So Colorado is pretty blue, right? And so they're probably all in on the CRT and the.
Oh yeah, and the DEI. Another article somebody wrote, who actually did interview me, they made it a big deal that I brought up that government or citizen taxes should not be paying for DEI classes, and they're like, "Ugh, she doesn't believe in the DEI." You can take the class and pay for it if you want, but citizens, because all the government employees have to take these classes, and that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, wait till your Jeremy guy or somebody keeps Googling you and finds out about the Mises Caucus and that we're on the Southern Poverty Law Center list. You'll get another big round of publicity for that. So tell, like, how big of like how many voters, how many votes do you think you have to get? Is it nonpartisan? Is the other guy a Democrat? What's the, you said the Republican, some of the Republican people like you. So is it going to be a two-way race?
Anyone? It's nonpartisan, supposedly. And funny enough, I put, I just was filling the thing out. I just put Libertarian Party of Colorado on the sheet. Like, I just did it because I was filling it. And that, they made a big deal of that. They're like, this is a like nonpartisan race. They made this huge deal of it in this one article. So that was, I'm like, well, I got publicity for the party, so that's good. But it's supposed to be nonpartisan, but the guy I'm up against is a Democrat. He's pushed for some of the weird school stuff. He's been supported by the school unions for stuff. He's definitely a left and just a government authoritarian. Like I said, he's been there forever. He wants to stay, you know, he wants to be mayor one day kind of thing. And votes wise, there'll probably be between 10 to 11,000 people voting. The last guy won was 6,400. I had a dream that I won with 7,500. So that's what I'm shooting for.
So when's the last dream like that you had come true?
I don't know, but okay. I thought that number was funny, or like, yeah, it was very pronounced. So I'm remembering it.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe if you brought it up, maybe you had a track record that you,
there's some things, I guess, not like direct things like that, but our dreams were like not come true, but
yeah.
I don't know. So I'm not that woo woo. I'm a little woo woo, but I'm a little woo.
Yeah. So the GOP people, like, I guess there's probably in any suburb, there's going to be a small minority of them. So are they in talking to them? Is it just regular Republican voters, or is it to some extent the party? And what are they responding to specifically in your campaign?
The people I'm connected with are like chairs of their district GOPs. They're pretty politically active. So the people that I've talked to so far, so they're the ones who would know if they were going to run somebody as well. And it seems like they're not going to. So that's good. And it's been great because it's been people who don't like the guy I'm running against. So I'm getting all this dirt. I'm getting the guy I'm running against was recall, or they attempted to recall him. So I got the list of, you know, I'm friends with the person now who ran that petition to recall this guy. So now I have the lists and the petitions, and it's kind of that kind of politics stuff is fun. I'm like, and they were so excited to have somebody who's not so milquetoast, I guess, to use word. Like they kind of, they even want someone who's a little bit of a, I think the whole Trump thing got them a little more open to kind of wacky people, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, is people don't realize now that like the whole, you have to show up in a 3-piece suit or a, you know, pantsuit or whatever, and play the respectability politics game. Like that's totally gone now. And all it takes is for people to just assert that, you know, I mean, there are still people who are going to play that game, but like, if you show up in normal clothes, like I always get a kick out of it. My wife always laughs that, like if we're watching a baseball or basketball game, the ad for the local TV news comes on, it's like tonight at 11, you know, the girl or the guy. And I was like, why do they talk like that? Nobody talks like that. And so the journalists are still trying to play that role and the politicians are, but I think you're right. Trump was like instantly killed that. So, yeah, I think it's an advantage to just be yourself, and sane people will kind of get the message that you're not one of the, you know, I don't want to go lizard people, 'cause I don't know if these people are that powerful yet, but also your opponent looks like he used to be the president of his homeowners association, which
it's just so boring. And like, yeah,
that's enough to, oh my goodness. So
he's one who said voters are too stupid, that voters can't decide if they want one trash service or not. So, you know.
Right. Well, if they can just, we got like four options. It's like privatized and outside the city of Knoxville and the county. And if all these people can figure it out, I'm sure they can figure it out in Colorado. So, but yeah. So, I guess talk about a little bit about, just specifically, I know Colorado has been for the Mises Caucus, just really very dependable and just some great people out there, over the last few years. How are things going? What have you learned? And specifically, have you done any of our like you know, local campaign training and stuff like that. So just let's talk about what we've been doing to try to, I want to see if it's making its way out to candidates like you.
Well, yeah. And we, last year, I don't know if you know, Mayor Aaron Lamb. So he's in Colorado. He's our mayor. So he kind of was a big catalyst too, like kind of the walk in the walk that, okay, and it is possible. Maybe we can win some of these local little things, especially if we are strategize about them a little bit. Right. So we have him. I think they canceled the Take Human Action tour here, which Aaron was going to do that training, and I would have gone to that. I haven't done any of the training. There was actually supposed to be a training tonight. I think it got canceled with Mises, but I will be doing as much as I can. We had a local guy out here do Jacob, which Mises runs the board out here for LP, and we're growing. I think people are getting it. I would love to get to a point where like there doesn't have to be a caucus, right? Like it's just because we are the normal people. We're the normal people. Hello, and we're right. No, so. It's Mises. I'm like became a state organizer. We have such a good group of people out here. Everyone's willing to help. We have you know how much it takes to run any, like people don't understand, like, well, why aren't libertarians doing this? And it's like, okay, do you know how many man hours it takes just to run the organization to start with? Just the state LP takes like a ridiculous amount of man hours volunteer. And then you need people who can actually be activists. And then you need people who can organize. You need all these levels of people. And it's not there, and that's we're getting there though. We're getting more people to come. We've been having a good presence down at our state capitol. Okay. So that's and doing testimony. I did three this year. We had a bunch of people do a couple of them. So you know, just walking the walk. It's not like you have. I hate when people say, "Oh, well, local election sucks," or they always talk down on people's strategies. And I'm like, well, just do what you think is best, and let other people do what's best. Because obviously, we're doing like some people are doing something. And it's working to some extent. So,
yeah. So, Aaron is not he's not the mayor of your town. Is it close to where you guys are? I forget the name.
It's Keensburg. It's about 45 minutes away from it's outside of Denver, I'd say.
Okay. So you've got somebody who knows how it's done to help you
and
with there.
He's been shrinking the government out there that he like, they made eggs, selling eggs legal because it was illegal.
Oh my.
He's doing stuff like that, so it's great.
What if people get a dirty egg?
Sue you, right?
So people are finding out. So, like, have you gone on like non-libertarian podcasts and like how is on Twitter? How's it working out? Are people finding you? And I'm just curious as to what kind of response somebody like you would get that. You know, what's useful, what's not, and what have you been able to do so far?
There's a group called Americans for Prosperity. They've reached out to me. We've hung out. Like I said, the Free Assange people found me. She's actually really cool. She's pretty much LP. Let's see, what else have we done? There's been a lot of different, there's a lot of like liberty-minded podcasts I've been on, but that aren't libertarian. I was supposed to be on Timcast, but they canceled that. Oh, and Jesse Kelly, they didn't even follow through. But he was like, "Yeah, I'll have you on your podcast," and then didn't follow through at all. But
Did they find out you were libertarian? Maybe
I'm like, maybe they searched back my history and were like, "No, she's crazy," but like, like that. So sorry. But I was supposed to be on Timcast, but I'm like, at least I'm on their radar. So now I'm bugging her to maybe like let me and Robbie go on sometime, I think, because we've been on podcasts before. We have a lot of fun. So there'd be a good Mises Caucus representation. So I keep pushing for that to happen. We'll see. That'd be good. But there's some other, like yesterday I was on a random podcast called AM Wake Up or something. I think they're in California and somebody from my own district was watching and donated money right away. So I need to be more in real life. I'm waiting for the weather to get better. Our weather sucks lately. So as soon as I'm hitting the streets as soon as it's nice. But I do appreciate my online presence that I have because it has been, when that guy doxed me, he brought me people in my own network, in my own district and stuff too. So he gave me all this advertising. And I really think on the fact that I have the online nailed down, then just getting out in person is going to be it. It's really all I'm going to need to do.
What is the weather like out there right now?
Today it's been rainy and gloomy. Okay. It snowed a couple days ago. Springtime in the Rockies is always, it's chaotic. There was a tornado yesterday, I'm pretty sure, somewhere out by Keensburg.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. You got a few months here, so it's going to be a long haul. So we'll check in. We'll have you on the new podcast at some point, I'm sure. Keep us posted and let us know. And this goes for people who are listening too. Like if there's a possible ballot issue in your town, like I know we helped with the decriminalized Denver like 3 or 4 years ago, which then turned into decriminalized Colorado. So like, wherever you are, whether it's Colorado or elsewhere, like if there's a local ballot issue, an opportunity to coalition with other people on a single issue, let your Mises Caucus people know in the state there. And if you can't find anybody or whatever, just go to takehumanaction.com, sign up there, and let us know when you sign up or tweet at me, which I'll take my thing off the it's just Liberty Aaron on Twitter, and I log in like once a week just to see if anybody's emailed me, or sometimes if I want to invite somebody on the show and they're only on Twitter, I go on. But let us know. And if you want to take the lead on it, or even if you can't be involved but you just want us to know about it, I wish you nothing but the best. I mean, it's very hard to do. Do you have like a budget? Are you hoping to raise money, and how much, and how can people do that, I guess, and can people outside Colorado give?
Yeah, I mean, most funny enough, everything I've gotten now so far has basically been Twitter people and everything, all the people I gained that way. But yeah, just on jessicafensky.com. Don't ever feel like you have to, and if you're in the area and want to give some time, I would much rather appreciate time at a lot of points. I have a campaign manager and he wants to raise, I think, like a little over 30,000. I'm like, I was like super cool with like 10. So we'll see. We'll just work within whatever we have. I'm not, like I said, I'm mostly going door to door. So it's just like print material that I really will need. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds good. Do you want to tell us who your campaign manager is, or is he trying to stay under the radar?
No, his name is Brandon Work, and he actually he's taking up our Free State Colorado. That's on Twitter. I think it's Free State Colorado 1, but he's kind of he's like, it's totally different from New Hampshire though. And he's kind of taking it up, and he's our like really great with legislation. He helps me write speeches. Like, he's a great guy.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely keep us in mind, interact with, our Twitter page, and we'll, when you get something that's funny or whatever, and we'll, I'm sure Dylan is already looking at your stuff and boosting it already. So, I'm excited, and something just tells me from your personality and from what the Twitter I have seen of you that we're going to have another couple more viral moments between now and November. I hope that those do come and we're able to turn them into votes. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. We'll like I say, we'll be in touch, and keep us posted.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. I'd like to thank Jessica for her time, her wisdom, her sense of humor on Twitter, and her activism. We really appreciate people like her wanting to get involved with the Mises Caucus and wanting our support. And if you want to support people like Jessica, and other candidates, or if you want to be a candidate yourself, if you want to support candidates like Jessica, go to takehumanaction.com and make a one-time or a recurring monthly contribution. If you want to run for office at the county level or more local, and you want help from the Mises Caucus on that, go to runaslibertarian.com and put your info in there. You'll be on the list to get the trainings, and you'll be told how you can ask for our endorsement and other support. we can give you. So thanks to Jessica. Go to decentralizedrevolution.com/105 for links to her stuff and for the show notes page, all of that stuff. Thanks to my co-producer, Simon Kalpin. Thanks to Dave versus Goliath for all the music you hear in Decentralized Revolution. And of course, thanks to everyone who subscribes to our email list and gives to Mises back over at takehumanaction.com. And if you haven't yet, or you haven't done it in a while, share, rate, review, subscribe to Decentralized Revolution. We'd really appreciate the help. We appreciate you listening, and we'll see you next time.